Ron and Annie and Diagnostics. It's a lot like bowling. If you can learn how to stand in the lane, get the right ball, wear the right shoes, and hit the same spot every time, you'll bowl a perfect game. The Car Doctor.
How do you know the new EGR valve isn't bad again? New means never ever worked in my library. So, maybe it's time to go back and talk to that repair shop and say, hey, is it possible? Can you check the EGR cooler and verify its operation?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Well, look at this. Here we are again, and it looks like we got a lot to do this hour, so let's get right to it. Bob in Long Island, 05 Honda CRV. How can I help you, sir? What's going on?
Hey, Ron, thank you for taking my call.
Love the show.
Thank you, sir. Long-time listener.
Thank you, sir. What can I do for you?
I've got an 05 CRV just broken in, 200,000 miles.
Just broken in, baby. Go.
And when the temperature drops below 38 degrees, 38, 36, she goes into a no-start mode, and I find that it has no spark.
Does it have?
It has injector pulse.
It has injector pulse.
It's got fuel at the rail.
Okay.
No codes.
Did you happen to go, just for giggles, go look at the coil connectors? Do you have power to the coils? Fuse number?
Intermittently, no. Next time, well, actually, I could go out now because it's cold and I can check for power at the
right.
coils.
Right. You know, do we have, there's three things I'd like to check here. Just, you know, pin number three is the black-white. That's going to be hot to the coil, just like a coil. A coil's, you know, power and ground. Do we have power, consistent power across the board? Do we have good ground at ground 101? Do we have an issue there? And then do we have ignition coil control? What sort of tools do you have? You don't have a, I'm going to ask this question, even though I think the answer is going to be no. You don't have a scope by chance, do you?
No, I don't have a scope, unfortunately.
You know, I'd like to see, do we have, do we have hot? Do we have ground? How do you know it's no spark? How are you testing spark? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I have an inductive coil-on plug. I checked all the coils, and I get an occasional very weak spark on the analyzer.
Okay, so you've got a coil with an alligator clip, and you're testing. You're holding it to ground. And
no, actually, it's all inductive. It goes from the top of the coil, and the machine records like a scope. You know, it shows a blip in the line, but it does it inductively.
Okay, how do you know you got how do you know you got injector pulse?
Well, I check it with a light. Also, when it cranks and doesn't start, I put a stethoscope on it, and I hear it click.
Okay. All right, that's what I want to hear. And you're testing it with a Noid light, not a test light, correct?
Right, a Noid light and by ear.
Okay. Okay. You know, the common things that go bad will be a crank sensor, which will cause a no spark condition. It'll have injector pulse, but it won't spark. If you unplug
That's the question that I had written down that I wanted answered.
Right.
Is the crank angle sensor going to give me injector pulse but no spark?
So what you could try is unplug the crank sensor, see if the car starts.
Really?
So, yeah. Sometimes that generation, if I'm not mistaken, I believe, I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I kind of think back, you know, we're going back 20 years here, Bob, or at least at least 13. And I think in 05, 04, 05, and I think 06, I think if you unplug the crank sensor, it will run without a crank sensor plugged in. It won't run well, but it'll run.
Oh, that's certainly an easy thing to try.
Right.
I was also thinking of putting a heat gun on low setting on the crank angle sensor.
You could try that? Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Absolutely.
So the crank angle sensor is a likely candidate.
Yeah,
these are the things I had in mind.
Yeah,
and I'd like you to cross them off the list.
Yeah, but I still want to know: do I have power? Listen, you could have a weak connection at the fuse box that feeds the coil positive, and that'll cause the exact same scenario. That's why I want to know: do you have hot at the coil?
Okay. Now, could this possibly be an ECM relay?
Yeah, it's possible. You're getting ahead of yourself.
Would the ECM relay, would that allow ejector pulse but not spark?
I'd have to look at wiring. I honestly don't remember that one.
Yeah, I actually looked at the wiring diagram and I couldn't make it.
Well, wait a minute, but the ECM relay is powering up the ECM, correct?
Yes, it is.
Do you have a scan tool?
I do.
Okay, so when the problem happens, plug in the scan tool. Does the scan tool communicate to the ECM?
Yes.
ECM's awake.
Right, and I did a test for a hard fault while it was in failure mode, and the scope detected it, the scanner detected it.
Right, so it's awake at that point. If the check engine light comes on the dashboard when you turn the key on engine off, and if you see a PCM, then yeah, you've got an alive PCM. So I think at that point, go do those things. Call me back, Bob. I appreciate the call. Let me move on. And keep the day rolling. Micah in Maine, how can I help you today, sir? How's things up there up north?
It's a little chilly, but, you know, it's like that all over. But at least on Monday, we're only getting rain and no snow, so that's not bad.
Yep.
Ron, you know, I'm a firm believer in extended warranties on a vehicle. I'm just one of those guys where I find that it's easier for me, it's more convenient, it gives me peace of mind.
Okay.
But I only buy the manufacturer extended warranty. So I bought one on my 2015 Subaru Legacy, and it's expiring in May. I spoke with my service writers about it at a dealership, and they said that they do have an aftermarket warranty. They don't believe in aftermarket warranties, nor do I. But they said this one, by a company called Wise MVP, Wise Motor Vehicle Protection, they've had incredibly good luck with. They've had no problems with it. They've been using them for several years. The dealership sells it, and while they wouldn't normally recommend an aftermarket warranty, they feel good about this one. So I wanted to call you and ask you and the Car Doctor community if anybody's had any experience with this particular company, because I'm very leery of it.
I've never heard of them. Doesn't mean anything. I don't see a lot of aftermarket warranties because I too tend to shy away from them. I prefer manufacturers. I had to replace a battery in a vehicle today, or I'm sorry, this week, for a customer who had an aftermarket extended warranty regarding the battery, the vehicle. But they, you know, we wanted to know, is the battery covered? It was a used vehicle purchase. The vehicle was 2 years old. It's a 5-year warranty. Do you know nowhere in that book, which was probably every bit of 50 or 60 pages thick, did it mention the word battery? I still don't know. The customer wanted his vehicle for the weekend. I put a battery in it. It's done. He says, I'll go have the argument with them on Monday if it is covered. But we both went through it. Couldn't find a single word that mentioned whether or not and that's my problem, that some of the stuff is so deceptive in terms of how it's written. And to call them, the second problem is you call these warranty companies, and the vast majority of the ones I've had the experience with, it's you're going to call them, and you can't ask a question, is a component covered? Well, you need to open up a claim first, sir. Well, how do I know if I'm going to open up a claim? Do I need to open up a claim if it's not covered? Why am I going through the 15 minutes, 20 minutes of clerical on the phone, wasting my time just to satisfy your bookkeeping errors? You know, Mike, I think the only way you can look at it is if the dealership is selling it and they're happy with it, then, you know, that's the proof in the pudding. If your dealership up in Maine is going to honor that warranty and they've had past experience with these guys, I think that's probably the best recommendation you can get.
That's how I'm feeling about it as well. These two service writers that I know, they're good people. They know me. You know, it's a relationship. I'm very fortunate that I have a dealership where I can have a relationship with the people there, including the service manager as well, where they know me by name and I walk in, and it's almost like walking into your shop, although I don't know that I'm getting as good a service, but
you know
what I mean.
Right, sure.
It's that relationship that you need to have. And they said that they felt they were good with it. They've had really good luck with it. They're selling it there. And so I figured, okay, you know, it might be worth a try. I'm looking at what's covered, and it's the stuff that's covered that's going to go bad in a 7-year-old car. You know, I'm the radio goes bad. That's $2,000 right there.
Right.
That's covered, you know, and the radio is the heating system, and it's everything. It's the whole computer. So it kind of looks like, and I've had trouble with it before. It's just one of those things that goes.
How many miles are on that car now, Micah?
Oh, very, very low. There's only like 45,000 miles on it. I hardly drive it anywhere.
Isn't it time for you to get another car?
In actuality, I could sell it for probably as close to what I paid for it, but I don't know what I could get to replace it at this point. I thought about it. I thought about updating it.
Right.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, and what's the warranty policy?
On another note,
what's the warranty policy going to cost?
For 5 years and 100,000 miles with a $100 deductible, it's $3,400, which, frankly, that's a lot of money, but the radio could be $1,000 right there.
Is it
I have it replaced twice already.
Is it transferable?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So it's an added feature in the selling of the vehicle.
Right.
Right. So, you know, $3,400 spread over 5 years. What do I always tell you? What have I always taught you guys? $125 a month to maintain a car, right?
Exactly.
There's your number.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, there's your number. So, second question, real quick.
Second question was, electric vehicles, are people out of their minds? There's no way we can do it. I think I sent you a piece that I did for the Airplane Geeks podcast on this and renewable fuels and how absolutely ridiculous that idea is, and basically that, you know, Newton wrote the law of no free lunch.
Right.
You know, that I'm looking at the fuel mix right now. I have an app on my phone, ISO New England, that gives you the entire New England region of what fuels are being used. And 32% of the electricity that's being generated as we speak is coming from natural gas. 25% is coming from nuclear.
Right.
There's just not enough available. All of the renewables is 13% of the electricity being generated as we speak in all of New England. And of those renewables, most of it is burning wood and refuse.
Well, Micah, as our guest, and I'm gonna leave it here in a quick second, but as our guest in April said, and his name escapes me at the moment, Tom will tell me in a minute, but, you know, he said that if all the vehicles went electric in the state of Maine. The gentleman who was the advisor to the governor of Maine, I can't recall his name at the moment, he said if the state of Maine went all electric last April, it would take something on the order of 7 or 8 nuclear power plants to generate all the electricity in order for the state to survive. And I just don't see it. So, you know, how are they going to do it? And I don't think that they can. Again, I think this is a case of the emperor has no clothes. Micah, I enjoy the conversation as always, sir, and you keep us posted on what's going up there in Maine. You are our main man. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor. I'll return right after this.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron Anani and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's go over to Rich in Syracuse. Wants to talk about his Jeep Renegade. Rich, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, I have an ongoing issue. It's a 2018 Jeep Renegade, and just hit 19K with it. It keeps on having the oil consumption, and I'm being told by the dealer and by the corporation itself, Fiat Chrysler, that this is SOP, standard operating procedure. And
What's the consumption level, Rich? How fast is it going through a quart?
It's going It's a quart every 2,000 miles.
Yeah, that's right on the money. Get your hands on, if you want the bulletin number, get your hands on Chrysler Bulletin 09-007-18, dated August of 2018, and that's the number. Chrysler says a quart every 2,000 miles is acceptable. Not acceptable to me, but that's what they're saying.
No, that's what, and I kind of wished, you know, when you have the, for the sales and the stickers, you know, they talk about the mileage that you get with it.
Right.
I don't think, I wish they would have said that I'd have to add a quart, you know, every 2,000 miles. That would have been a good selling point.
Well,
I don't think it was.
But guess what? You went and bought the vehicle. That their goal was to get you to buy the vehicle, right? Well, you know, and here's the real ugly part, all right? you're consuming a quart of oil every 2,000 miles. The manufacturer is telling you that's acceptable. You've got to think down the road as that vehicle ages. How is that going to affect, you know, things like the catalytic converter and the oxygen sensors? Because that oil's going somewhere.
I was just trying to get some, because immediately I wanted to trade it in, but then I don't think it's been right. If I know that there's something wrong with it, trading it in and sticking it to somebody else.
Yeah, well, you know, if you trade it into a dealer's going to give you wholesale value for it, and at that point it's fair game. And then whoever goes to buy it as a used vehicle, you know what? Like I always tell you guys, you buy a used vehicle, you got to do your research. And that's
okay.
That's
and,
just
all right. I was,
you know,
just wondering if you heard if there was any other thing that could have been done with
it. Nope. I'm telling you, you go read that bulletin. That bulletin is titled Engine Oil Consumption Guideline. Within the first paragraph, I remember it. It's a quart in 2,000 miles is considered acceptable. Chrysler's telling you that's normal for them, not for every vehicle, but for them. So just not a good connotation. All right, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. I'm sorry. And that's, you know, it's...
Yeah, have a good...
You too. You too, Rich. I'm sorry. You know, it comes down to you've got to do your research, right? You've got to... And sometimes you don't have enough research. Sometimes the vehicle's too new to go and do research. And, you know, what do you do with that? And how do you overcome that? You know, here's a case where even if you had a warranty, and this is the sad part, right? Even if you had an extended warranty on this vehicle, and this vehicle could very well still be under powertrain coverage, the manufacturer is telling you this is normal, and you know they've always got some wiggle room to get out of it. You know, but oil consumption is a tough one. The manufacturers, for whatever reason, they're allowing and accepting oil consumption up to certain levels to be the new norm, and I just don't understand that. To me. You know, a quart in 3,000 miles is too much. So, and I'd be willing to bet, Rich, if you're still there, and for anyone else listening, that you're going to find as that vehicle ages, if it's doing a quart every 2,000 at 20,000 miles, you've got to believe that vehicle is going to only get worse in time. And you know, Chrysler doesn't seem to want to react too well to all of this. I've noticed that. Of recent times, you know, but that's Chrysler. We had a couple of cases this week. What did I work on? It was an 18, a 17 or an 18 Jeep Cherokee, and 39,000 mile vehicle came in for an oil change, and I, you know, it's funny because I said to Ed when he dropped it off, I told him, I said, this particular engine, the same one that's in Rich's Renegade, I said, this has a problem with, you know, oil consumption issues, and didn't seem to matter. It was their first time seeing it. The vehicle was 4 months overdue, 4 months overdue and 1,500 miles, and you know, he kind of got the sermon, and you know, the washers didn't work. 3-4 year old vehicle, the washers don't work. Turns out the hose, the nozzle setup under the dash pad or under the hood pad had broken, and it's on back order from Chrysler. We won't see one for 2 to 3 weeks. You know, what kind of junk is Chrysler building sometimes, you wonder? I don't know. I got to keep these thoughts to myself. I'll get in trouble. I'm Ron Ananey in the Car Doctor. I'm coming right back. I hope you are too. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get right over to Mark in Virginia, 13 F-150. Mark, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yes, sir. We have a lot of, you know, company trucks, all Fords.
Okay.
And it's a F-150 with a V6, 130,000 miles. Doesn't burn one drop of oil. I notice you're turning in about, you know, oil consumption.
Right.
Doesn't burn one drop of oil. Came up to a stoplight a couple of weeks ago, and the oil pressure gauge on the dashboard drops down to low, basically zero, and it starts beeping, beep, 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 beep. And you give it a little bit of gas, and it zooms back to normal pressure.
Okay.
And recently had an oil change and oil filter, and is still doing this occasionally, usually after running it on the highway and coming up to a traffic light and stopping, and drops down to zero, but it's not ticking, and the oil is fine. I'm curious if this is like an oil sensor pressure switch or something, maybe
could be.
On the engine block?
It could be a sender. The issue is, if oil pressure falls below 5 PSI, this is a V6?
Yes, V6.
If oil pressure falls below 5 PSI on the V6, it will turn on the light and, you know, record or report, you know, what it's perceiving as low oil pressure. The question is it a sender or is it true low oil pressure? The other third possibility, the fact that it only seems to happen on the highways after you're putting a good long pull on it, is I have seen some of the higher mileage versions of this engine have restricted or clogged oil pickup screens in the pan, and it will limit the ability of, you know, pressure to be built. So, you know, the question is, and obviously, you know, the simple question is there enough oil in it? Is the oil filled to level that's, you know, I'm assuming that much has been looked at or considered to this point too. So if it does not start to rattle and make noise, Mark, because they will, these variable cam timing engines, which that V6 should be, when they run out of oil, good Lord, they sound like you're banging on the inside of a drum. You know, they start to make a bunch of noise. So
I could imagine. That's why I'm thinking it might just be a faulty sensor.
Right.
Because it doesn't tick at all, right. And it runs fine.
Right. So, you know, the argument...
it only drops when you come up to, like, a traffic light. The first time it happened, I had a sudden stop, and that's when it first started. And I was thinking, well, probably just the oil is slushing around on the pan. But since then, even after the oil change, it has done it at least a dozen times, and the oil level is fine, and
well,
it doesn't tick.
You know, the choice here becomes, you know, you're either going to put some diagnostic time in it, let somebody hook up an oil pressure gauge and drive it, or you're going to put an oil pressure sending unit in it and plug and pray and hope it's the part, you know.
Okay.
And it's one or the other. Just make sure if you're replacing this sender, you're getting a good quality sending unit. You know, don't go for the cheap stuff in the aftermarket. Make sure you're buying a good part, because I've seen also when we're shooting in the dark like this without having a spec or a standard to go by, you know, you may want to, if the company has a fleet mechanic, is there a fleet mechanic, or are you guys responsible for maintaining your own vehicles?
No, we take it to a shop that we have dealt with for quite a while.
Okay. Then ask them to, what I would do is, just as a benchmark, I would ask them to, you know, unscrew the pressure gauge, the sender, put a gauge in it, take it for a ride, record oil pressure. At least you've got a benchmark to work from. You know what? It's worth the up to an hour of shop time, I'm going to guesstimate. They've got to take the sending unit out anyway to replace it. And at least then you've got the option of knowing what oil pressure is. Listen, at 130,000 miles, maybe it's the beginning of the end, and maybe you need to know that too before and the company would probably like to know that before the vehicle gets stuck and you have downtime, and then the company loses productivity for the guy on the road. So I say let's get it to the shop. Check oil pressure, take it for a ride, duplicate the problem. It's got plenty of oil pressure. Let them put a sending unit in it, and it's going to end all the confusion. And right away, you'll know exactly what you've got to do. All right, kiddo, but like I said, anytime it falls below 5 PSI, that's going to happen just like they're describing. So good luck to you, Mark. Let me know if you need more. I'm here for you. Let's get over to Pete in Michigan. Pete, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron, so glad I found you. So I've got a 1995 Chevy Blazer with a V6, 4.3 liter Vortec, but my concern is with the brakes. And I went through, replaced all the brakes and new lines in the rear. It's got drums in the rear and disc up front. Replaced the master, the brake booster from, and I just bought the truck not too long ago. So I figured, well, okay, new booster, new master cylinder. The combination valve got locked up, replaced that, replaced lines in the back, so I'm doing great. So I start to bleed everything out. The rear bleeds just perfectly fine, no bubbles, and I couldn't bleed the front. And I literally went through like 2 32-ounces of brake bleed oil, and I couldn't get bubbles out of it. And I'm looking about this Kelsey Hayes four-ball system that it has mounted to its driver's side inner fender well. And I'm wondering if I got air into that. And I just don't really understand that system. I bought a clip that's supposed to be coming soon to
press the plunger.
Yeah. But can I bleed it like one side at a time? Because that one tool is like $30, and I didn't want to have to buy two of them. I can just bleed one side or the other, or do I have to do them at the same time?
Let's start at the beginning, Pete. When you replaced the brakes on this, you changed all the lines?
No, only the rears.
Okay, so the front half of the system is pretty much as you purchased it.
Yep, all factory steel lines. And when the drivers did just rust out on me, and had a lot of fluid come out of that.
Yeah.
And all this time, I never had the brake light on. Now I have the brake light on, and I've got new lines coming, and I'm wondering if that combination valve will just reset and my brake light will go back off again.
Well, if you know, the combination valve is a combination valve. If you think you've got a combo valve that's, you know, pinned in one direction, open up a line on the opposite side and bleed it. You know, this is a good place where you're going to need a helper. You know, open up the combination valve, have somebody stroke the pedal, push fluid out, and it should push the prop valve in the other direction. If that doesn't work, open up a line on the other side of the prop valve, push it the other way. One way or the other should move that valve inside the prop valve, the proportioning valve inside the combination valve. But before we go there, when you replace the master, tell me how you... I'll tell you what, let's do this, Pete. Let me pull over, take a pause. I'm going to run up against the clock. I don't want to rush this. And you sit tight, and I'll come right back to you. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this.
Shut up and start talking.
Right away, yes, boss, here I am. Let's get back to Pete in Michigan. Pete, you're still there, sir.
Yes, I am, and I know where you're going.
Go ahead. Where
even
am I
though
going?
When I bought the brake booster and it came with a rebuilt master, I detached the master and bench bled it.
Okay. So let's
I don't think I ran it dry. I used a proportioning lock pin to keep the combo in place now after I jammed the other one, but I've replaced that with new as well.
So let's make the dangerous assumption that the master is bled, and you have good fluid there. I won't put you through the pain of, because it sounds like you're smart enough to realize you could also, you know, they do make hydraulic plugs. You could plug the master. Do you have a good pedal? Good. The master's bled. Move on. So that's always there as an option. This is a four-wheel anti-lock brake car, Pete?
Yeah, it's the 95 is a really odd year.
Yep, it is. It could
doesn't
be.
It has an OBD2 connector, but it really is an OBD1, so they call it a 1.5.
Right.
They hadn't fully adopted the OBD2 standard.
Right.
So this is the only year that it was the first year of the second generation, and it came out North American Truck of the Year, and of course Playboy magazine Truck of the Year. That's the most important credential.
Oh, absolutely. absolutely.
But it doesn't fit. It's not an S10 and it's not a 94. And
right.
It's like a T10.
Well, and that's why, so this is I just want to understand this. This is a four wheel ABS vehicle, and it has the big hydraulic control unit with all the brake lines going into it mounted on the fender well. That's the piece you're talking about.
Right, but the electronic control module, it's a Kelsey Hayes.
Right.
The control module, why I couldn't get my Snap-on brake to talk to it.
No, you won't. It's not on the bus. It doesn't have communication. The only way I recall, there was a special oddball, you know, buy this tool for the three times in its lifetime of the vehicle. You're going to need to talk to it kind of a tool. It's, you have an odd duck, right, Pete. You really do. So the purpose of those tools that you're waiting for are to put that ABS controller into a neutral state to allow internal passages to be pushed open so that air can be pushed out, if that's the case here. So, yes, you need at least two, and for some reason I think you need three, but I'd have to look at a procedure to verify that in my head 100%. But, you know, other than going through the process when you get, you know, all your tools together, all right, have you considered or do you have the ability to, if you were going to bleed this, I wonder what would happen if we back bled this. Have you ever seen the little hypodermics with the rubber hose on the end for brake bleeding?
Yes.
You have.
I don't know what the back bleeding is. What you're talking about?
Well, what they're doing is you're putting a hypodermic with a rubber hose on the bleeder, and you're gonna you know, put fluid into the bleeder.
Force it backwards
and push air up so it comes out through the master and dislodge the bubbles that way. If you can get past any blocked pins or passages inside that ABS control unit.
Okay.
You're pushing fluid the other way. Now, before you go through all this, and I believe you can still find those brake bleeders, those reverse syringe flushers, O'Reilly Auto Parts has them. You can go on O'ReillyAuto.com and find them there. But before you go through that, I would, for the age of the vehicle, unless those any other brake lines are perfect, I would just change all the brake lines at this point, because you know it's only going to come back to haunt you.
Yeah, I do know that.
You know?
I'm obsessed with this truck, so I'm trying to restore it.
Yeah, no, they're
great
vehicles. They really were. You're running out of parts. You're going to find less and less parts available. You know, which is a whole nother issue unto itself. It's one of the reasons you're going to see a lot of those vehicles go by the wayside. We had a customer with a 96, and Henry kept his right up until the last minute. I believe we needed a fuel tank for it. And, you know, for love of money and not for lack of trying, we could not find a fuel tank, or was it a fuel pump module for this particular S10? That was an S10 because that was OBD2. It was a 96, yep. And it just, you know, it was very frustrating.
I already replaced the fuel tank and the pump.
Right, yeah. So
question for you, two more questions. On
sure.
This four-wall, because it does, and I bought the official GM service manuals, the two, like, Detroit Bibles.
Sure.
It does take just two of those tools, but I'm going to have to use them simultaneously if I do go forward.
Yes.
On the bleeding. One pin sticks out farther than the other. Is that a concern?
I think that's showing you that the device is not centered, and that's what those tools are going to take care of. So I've seen that before. Not uncommon.
And then thirdly, if I do the reverse bleed, will that also bleed? Because, you know, in bleeding, and I've been doing it self.
I don't know. You know, well, what you're really asking me is, will the reverse bleed push past the blocked port in the ABS controller and get the air out? You know, Pete, I don't know. So
I was going the other way. Would it bleed? Because I don't think that I got the master fluid down far enough. But if I did get any air into it, would it flush the master backwards?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That I've seen. That I can tell you. You know, take the ABS controller out of the equation. Just that, you know, reverse flush line from the caliper up to the master. That I've seen. If you have somebody stand there at the master with the lid off, and you got to go slow because you're going to create a little geyser in the master, you will see.
Right.
You will see a little. You know, you'll see a little waterfall in the master as it flows up. But you can see bubbles come out. The question I've got in my mind is, will it be able to push past the ABS controller? And I don't know that answer. So at most, I'm asking you to go on O'ReillyAuto.com. You know, probably spend upwards of maybe $50, probably less, for those brake bleed syringes, and see what that does for you. Call me back, Pete, and if you get a chance, send us some pictures. Maybe we'll put them up on our Facebook page. We've always a lot of fun looking at some of these older vehicles, and a 95 T10 Blazer was a nice one. So good to hear from you. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We are back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. You know, I want to close out the hour today. I want to tell you a story about Lisa, a new customer to the shop, and her 2016 Toyota Highlander. And I'm not really quite sure how to tell you this story because it's the long and the short of it is Lisa is new to us. She came to us. She's been going to the dealer the past 3 or 4 years, maybe 4 or 5 years, 4 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever. And she recently came out of there with a laundry list. The car needed brakes. It needed a brake flush. It needed a tire rotate. It needed cabin filter, an evaporator coil cleaning, and a laundry list, upwards of $2,000 worth of work. And at 38,000 miles, Lisa was smart enough. She said, you know, I got a question there. Something nagged at her in the back of her mind. She brought us the car, legit, just no squabbles. You know, it was $159. It needed a cabin filter and a good look over. And I just keep thinking to myself, if these guys are going to try to be thieves, they should get a gun to go with the mask they're probably wearing because of the pandemic. I don't know. I was glad to have her. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.